Tri-County Contracting, worry-free roofing, siding, and windows. To sign up for a free estimate, get info on their worry-free roof tune-up or their free yearly roof inspections, or to get an instant roof quote, visit them online at tricountycontractingwi.com.
And then your clerk's office should list those dates and times when it's available.
So don't take our word for it.
You got to get out and vote.
Yep, thank you, Bob. See, even Uke says.
Get out and vote.
Jazz as hell.
It's go time.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here's Eric Bilstad and Vince Petrano.
This is how it started with Susan and me, you know. It occurred in nature a number of times. Folks commented and said they liked it, and so we just made it a thing.
I have already thrown a couple of shirts on the scrap heap that I can never wear to work.
That shouldn't have to be.
Because I know that you wear similar items.
If you're watching along the live stream here on YouTube, and you can click watch to 855-616-1620, we'll send you the link to the live feed. And it's available on our website and our digital mobile app as well. You can watch inside the studio. Eric and I are wearing virtually the same.
We look like a couple at Great America. Hey, let's go.
Yours is navy. I'm black.
They look exactly the same on the video.
Well, just so, so you're on notice, this is my uniform for all of winter.
Well, that's my point. The V-neck sweater. There goes any sweater that I have now. I can't wear.
I have no creativity in my wardrobe. I don't care.
We even got people texting about it. Saying that we text each other before. Yes, we got texts asking if
it's the opposite of it. Eric couldn't be more upset. He's like, no, I can't wear this anymore. Why?
Ever
Who
again.
Cares?
Ever again. Going to the bottom of the barrel. I gotta get rid of this.
That's
shirt
how
now.
It started with Susan and me. One day my tie matched. I had this really kind of bold blue tie, and she had a dress or something that matched it, and people would text in or write on Twitter or whatever. Oh, it looks so nice. You guys are matching. And I'm like, easy enough. If people like that, I can match her every day. So that's where that became a thing.
Okay.
So do you want me to text you every day now?
No, absolutely not. Actually, maybe you could, because then I'll know what not to wear.
I don't know why it bothers you. Who cares? Hey, got another stadium debate on our hand. Let me get into this here.
Yes, please.
I'm going to offer some local perspective based on knowing some of the principles involved, as well as the benefit of a term that Vice President Harris uses ad nauseum, my lived experience.
Based on a lived experience.
Right. Thank you, Madam Vice President. My lived experience in Green Bay. So I went to college at St. Norbert's, just outside of Green Bay. It's in De Pere. My first job was at WFRV-TV, Channel 5, Eyewitness News, the then CBS-owned station in Green Bay, now just a CBS affiliate. And in nearly 10 years there, I learned some things, E, about how Northeast Wisconsin, Green Bay in particular, sees not only the rest of its state, but how Green Bay sees itself. And that perspective is important as we get into the debate over the future of Lambeau Field and the Green Bay Packers in Green Bay, that hallowed ground that opened as City Stadium back in 1957. Packers say they've already delayed $80 million in stadium improvements that they had hoped to have online for this season. And they are putting plans for another $1.5 billion more in projects on hold until they know what their lease situation is in Green Bay for the long term. Packers are warring right now with the mayor of Green Bay over a long-term plan and lease deal. They are warring, and the Packers are going public.
Our main disappointment is just not having the ability to have that discussion with the city, the continued cancellation, refusal to engage, those types of things.
That's Aaron Popke from the Green Bay Packers. He's the team's director of public affairs. And he is speaking there with the local Green Bay media. These clips specifically I pulled from Fox 11 News in Green Bay. Packers are accusing the city of Green Bay, specifically the mayor, of holding up conversations about a long-term lease deal. They say they've made three offers to the city about a new deal, and the mayor just won't engage.
It's the best deal any city could hope for. And to presume that the existing terms of the deal would be the same moving forward is where the... You know, where the error is.
So that's Popke again. The mayor of Green Bay is Eric Genrich. And he's not denying that he's holding things up. In fact, he's kind of proud of it.
You know, the current lease is much better for Green Bay taxpayers than what they've offered. And, you know, once they're ready to revise and resubmit an offer that's in keeping with discussions that took place over several months, we're going to be happy to get together and talk with them.
So that's Mayor Genrich in his comments with several outlets there as well. I pulled that clip from WBAY TV Action 2 News in Green Bay. The Green Bay City Council today is planning a news conference for that body to discuss the stadium and lease issues. That, according to multiple Green Bay media outlets, is set for 4:15.
So not the mayor, afternoon. But the council?
Yes, and it's noted that the mayor won't be there. So I don't know if the council takes a different view than that of the mayor, which
we'll know
is
by
entirely
what they're
possible.
Wearing.
They all show off in Jordan Love jerseys.
They go back.
So you may have a faction between the mayor and the council. Don't know. Or they may be on the same page and the council wants to have a word about it as well. Let me back up so that we can better kind of frame your understanding of the issue. Who owns Lambeau Field? The Packers don't. They are tenants. Green Bay Brown County Professional Football Stadium District, along with joint ownership of the city of Green Bay. That's who owns Lambeau Field.
So that's similar to AmFam?
Yeah, it's similar. Right, their football, their stadium district has different things and different rules than does ours for American Family Field here in Milwaukee. But yes, a similar type of arrangement, a sort of public, quasi-public entity that sort of handles some of that governance. So their lease is with that stadium district and the city. The Packers don't own Lambeau Field. The lease is hard on till 2032. So after that, the team has some options for extensions of the lease under its current terms for about 10 years after that. Like every 2 years, the team could say, yep, let's still keep doing this. But really, the hard date is 2032. And that's the deal right now. The team right now pays rent of about $1.1 million or so. And under the current deal, that rent increases annually by 2.75%. So about 2.75%, the rent goes up every year.
Okay.
That's the deal right now in place. What the Packers want to do, what they say their proposal to the city has been, is look, we want to invest all kinds of money in Lambeau Field. And we have the money. And we'll do that. And we're not asking for taxpayer support. We're not asking for state or city or county funding whatsoever. We'll do all of that. And in exchange for a long-term lease deal that calls for us to handle all of that, what we want from you is we don't want the rent to go up every year anymore. So what we'd like to do is freeze rent payments so we no longer have this annual 2.75% increase. That's the deal the Packers say that they have made to the city of Green Bay.
Is that a good deal for the city?
Well, the mayor doesn't think so. He's like, why? I got a deal through 2032 that's going to keep going up by $200,000 or $300,000 every year. Why would I not do that deal? And
right.
In defense of the mayor, like his fiduciary responsibility is to the taxpayers
city.
Of city.
Right.
So there is that.
Okay.
And I'm not picking a side on it. I really don't. I understand the arguments on both. The Packers are accusing the mayor of just flat obstructionist. They say he won't even sit down and meet. They say the last time it took him forever to get a meeting on the schedule. They sat down with the mayor and they had this meeting, and then there was going to be a follow up, and the mayor at the last minute canceled the meeting. So the Packers are accusing Genrich of playing some games here.
Can you imagine, like, Mark Murphy sitting in the lobby at Green Bay City Hall and just kind of waiting?
Hello.
Yes, just wait.
I have a meeting with the mayor.
I was told he was available.
Yes. The mayor's out. He can't see you now. Well, that's funny because, and let me back up and tell you about my experience in some of the politics of Green Bay. That's funny because if you're a casual Packers fan, you watch the game on Sunday afternoon and you're the national media come in here and say, oh, they love their Packers here. It's a publicly owned team and it's just a big love fest, right? And I have always said what I learned up there is a difference between folks who love the Packers but who sometimes don't love the Packers.
Explain.
Everybody loves the Sunday afternoon ball game, right? They love a kickoff, football crazy town. They love Jordan Love.
Yep.
They love they love Packers. But some folks have a different feel about the corporate entity, the governance that is the organization. And they feel a little bit of resentment there. They feel like the Packers sort of push people around and do different things that maybe aren't in the best interest of the community. There is also this undercurrent of, you know, if we didn't have the Packers, we'd be just fine. This is a wonderful place to live here in Northeast Wisconsin. We have the bay, we have the fishing, we have the hunting, we have farming. We're a wonderful community. We have a nice museum.
Oof.
We'd be just fine without the Packers. And almost a resentment of folks who suggest, like, what would Green Bay ever be without the Packers? That's there. It's an undercurrent that runs.
Right.
And if you don't believe me, look at the last time they went to referendum. And the Packers wanted to do that whole how Lambeau Field looks, and if you're a younger listener right now, Lambeau Field didn't always look like
that. Yeah, the atrium, is that what they wanted to build?
The atrium and all the build-out that makes it look old. That was done in 2003. And they went to referendum, Brown County only. They wanted to levy, I think it was a half-cent sales tax.
Wasn't like Bob Harlan going door-to-door, basically?
Eric, I walked with him. Bob Harlan is a humble man, and he famously would answer his own phone there at 1265 Lombardi Avenue. But he did not want to do that. He's not a politician, and he didn't want to beg people for money. But he is door-knocking like some guy running for the city council. Door-to-door, hi, Bob Harlan here from the Green Bay Packers. I sure hope you vote yes on the referendum. It was that close. It was 53-47. In Green Bay.
Yeah.
So lest you think that all the politics around the Green Bay Packers are, you know, you would think if you didn't know, that's a 98-2, right? That's a slam dunk. Fix up Lambeau Field coming off the Super Bowls? Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't. So there's that undercurrent there, and this battle may stretch on. Now, unlike in every other major league or professional football city, like Packers can't leave. They ain't going anywhere. So what leverage do they have there, really? There again, too, the city, what would you be if you didn't take care of this?
Mm-hmm.
The Packers are bringing the draft to Green Bay, Wisconsin in the spring. The huge economic impact that is. So both sides are both leveraged and not leveraged. But you don't have the threat of a team leaving. So that will not color this conversation. But it's fascinating to see how this is going to play out. I can't wait to see what the city council says in Green Bay this afternoon. 8:23 on Wisconsin's Morning News. A27 on this Wednesday morning, Wisconsin's Morning News. I've always found this interesting. The folks who stand in line super early for something that's opening because they're afraid they would end up in a long line.
Or they're afraid they may not be able to get the device or cell phone or movie ticket.
Right. Yes. But it's like, well, perhaps. I got here at 3 in the morning for something that starts at 7 because I didn't want to get caught in a line. And, well, you were there for 4 hours then.
And the Brewers park everybody on opening day.
Exactly. Exactly my point. And it's not the same thing with what do we call it? In-person absentee voting, which opened in Wisconsin yesterday. But there were long lines. And if your whole point was, I want to go now to avoid the lines, but then you found yourself in a 20-minute line, what was the point?
Very surprised by that. Not that everyone wants to vote. Not surprised by that. And to see so many people jazzed to be able to vote and do all that, great. No, that's excellent. It wasn't just in Milwaukee. Waukesha had some long lines as well. New Berlin had some long lines. So it was in a lot of different areas where you had these people waiting to do their long. Menominee Falls, they got a report that the lines were long there. Processing is a little bit different. And they did have some slowdowns in places like Glendale where they had issues because they literally weren't expecting this many people.
My clerk tells me that the person at the state said to her, we didn't anticipate this level of volume on the first day of early voting.
That's Glendale Mayor Brian Kennedy. Why would you? Because if right. there's a line down the block, don't you just keep driving and say, come back tomorrow.
It looks like a line. The whole point was I wanted to avoid a line.
And again, not bagging on anyone for wanting to vote. That's fantastic.
And for those folks who stuck it out and thank you, your vote's taken care of.
Yeah, thanks for playing your role. It just surprised us to see so many people willing to wait in line when they don't necessarily have to.
Glendale and Wisconsin Elections Commission were out with some clarification as to what happened, particularly in that community, why things were delayed.
So they had issues with the WisVote system. It verifies voter registrations. That system got overwhelmed because of the volume of voters. Wisconsin Elections Commission said that the delays were due to higher than expected voter turnout. They've been resolved. The system lag should not prevent any voter's ability to vote in-person absentee in the coming weeks, says the WEC.
Jazz as hell?
Yeah, they sure are. Sure seen that way. Lines down the block in some areas, so clearly this is a thing. As of this morning, the city of Milwaukee, this is only the city of Milwaukee numbers. I wanted to get for the whole state, so I apologize for not having that. But the Milwaukee number of voters on Tuesday, the city tells us, was 4,700. So 4,761 ballots. I almost would have guessed more just given the long lines, but they were also elsewhere, not just in Milwaukee or Milwaukee County.
Well, and again, I will add my disclaimer here. You cannot.
Are we getting reports of people in random suburbs like waiting to vote and what?
You know, I thought, up well, and, Because what so often whether
someone
you watch
in Lannan waiting in line and wait, you guys aren't open today.
Well, because very often, you know, our reporting is Milwaukee centric and not just us. You watch any of the TV stations or whatever, you know, it's all about, you know, like, well, there are 10 places you can vote in Milwaukee with this in-person absentee balloting, which is true. They're open on Saturdays. They're open on Sundays for the next whatever. And so you go knock on your clerk's door. You go down to Village Hall, wherever you live, or Town Hall, even City Hall. And you're like, hey, what gives? They said you can vote on Saturday. They said you can. That's City of Milwaukee. Every local community sets its own rules within certain guardrails, according to state law, for when they want to offer in-person absentee voting. They don't even have to do it if they don't want to. Your clerk's office does not have to offer that, according to the law. They can, and they can do it within those parameters.
The JAS has a nice link on their page of all of the many different municipalities where you can find. Also, you can get that by just going on to, I'd say most, if not all, municipalities' websites will tell you if there is an open time to be able to go and do the in-person absentee ballot.
Sure. So if you live in the village of whatever, you go to village clerk, and then your clerk's office should list those dates and times when it's available.
So don't take our word for it.
You got to get out and vote.
Yep. Thank you, Bob. See, even you exist.
Get out and vote. Jazz as hell.
Just, yeah.
It's go time.
What did we hear about for days leading up to Tuesday night?
Yeah, big vote, big vote. A lot of folks siding off. Right.
Yes.
Yeah, these folks in favor, these folks saying pump the brakes.
Waukesha County Board was going to vote on a 0.5% sales tax increase to implement into the system there in Waukesha County because the county executive, Paul Farrow, had said, hey, look, we got $5 million budget gaps.
Every year.
Every year that we're fighting with. We got all the stuff with the state that's in the shared revenue situation. This is what we're, this is our hand right now, so we have to figure out a plan. So the executive, along with the support of many others, including the sheriff, the DA, and others, was pushing this 0.5% sales tax. Well, they were going to vote last night. Many people were upset about it. There were some frustration and some concern that there hadn't been enough time allotted for this vote. I was very curious. We both were like wondering how the board was going to handle this. Some big names had come out against the sales tax increase, including former Governor Scott Walker and former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, who you never hear from. She was on the afternoon show yesterday.
But everything costs too much. And this would just be even one more burden on the people of Waukesha County and anybody else who bothers to travel through.
I haven't heard from Clayfish since she lost the primary a couple of years ago, it seems like.
Yeah, interesting how this is her sort of return to public politics. Whether, I mean, maybe she's just the concerned resident.
Yeah, she lives in the county.
She lives out there in Waukesha County, so maybe that just tweaked her enough to be like, no, I got to say something
about this.
I got to
get on the phone on this one. So anyway, because of all that, all eyes were on the county board vote last night. All eyes.
There were some eyes on it.
And no vote. So before any votes or any of that, the county executive said, okay, I'm pulling this back. He was reading the writing on the wall, and perhaps there's some other strategery taking place as well. But the county executive said his decision to withdraw the sales tax ordinance from consideration is democracy in action. His quote was, postponing the measure will allow for more public input and provide for an opportunity to educate residents on the county's financial challenges. Then he goes on to say this, I will work with the county board to examine possible legislative remedies, including the potential to levy less than a 0.5% county sales tax currently allowed under state law. Now, why would that be interesting?
So there is a suggestion that state legislators in the next session could take up a proposal. Right now, counties are allowed to levy a 0.5% sales tax. But as the law is written, that's it. In fact, it's why Milwaukee County had to get a special exemption to raise their sales tax from that 0.5 to 0.9. Remember that whole flap?
Yep.
It's because state law doesn't allow for it, but for that exception. So there's at least a suggestion that the legislature might rewrite the law or pass a law that would allow counties to levy less than the 0.5. The math as it worked out, according to the county executive, was we got a $5 million annual hole. If we do the 0.5% sales tax, that'll raise $55 million a year. Begs the question of, well, if it would be allowed, couldn't you plug the $5 million hole with a 0.2 or a 0.3?
Right, yeah. Is that more palatable to the county board and to the residents of Waukesha County? And there is also some fear of, okay, if we get $55 million, how is that money getting offset and given back to the people of the county. So for now, no votes. It will not happen. And you can expect, though, that this will come about again because the budget gap remains.
You heard it in the news. The United States Secret Service again being asked, how could this happen? And this time it was in Milwaukee. That story next. Greg Pancake Hill produces the program. He gave me a look like, this is you. I'm like, yeah, but you got to wait for the grr. Another shocking, how could this happen moment involving the U.S. Secret Service and the safety of the dignitary whose life is in the hands of those agents, and in this case, her detail. A near miss that we are just learning about this week from Vice President Kamala Harris in her motorcade in Milwaukee earlier this week. Now, at the start, I will note this is different than the assassination attempts on former President Trump. This one was not that. No evidence that there was anything nefarious planned or intended, but it could have been. And even if it weren't, the results still could have been disastrous. Monday of this week, Vice President was in town. Where was she?
Brookfield.
Brookfield, right?
Sharon Lynn Wilson Center, yep.
So she's making her way back to Milwaukee Mitchell to fly out. Motorcade is on its way back to the airport in Milwaukee. And a Milwaukee drunk was able to get within feet of her traveling vehicle on the freeway as he was driving the wrong way on I-94. Are you kidding me? If you paid any attention, you would have thought, this is impossible. This stuff is locked down. This can't happen. Freeway in the eastbound lanes headed toward the Marquette is closed to traffic, as you typically have for these high-level motorcades. Mostly closed, anyway. Because in video obtained by Channel 12 first, you can see it plain as day. There's one car that is not supposed to be there. The driver is going westbound in the eastbound lanes, which on any random Monday night is really bad and potentially deadly. But in this case, he's approaching the motorcade of the sitting vice president of the United States of America. The freeway is supposed to be closed. So this guy's going the wrong way, drives right past the motorcade, drives past it. Statement from the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office that was involved in the escort. About 8:26 p.m. Monday, October 21st, an SUV operated by a 55-year-old Milwaukee man was observed traveling westbound in the eastbound lanes of I-94 at the Marquette interchange, approaching the motorcade. As it drew closer, Milwaukee County Sheriff's deputies stopped the SUV, observed an open intoxicant in the vehicle, suspected the driver was impaired, conducted field sobriety tests, took other investigative measures, and ultimately took the driver into custody on recommended charges of operating while intoxicated and recklessly endangering safety.
What time did you say this was?
8:26 p.m.
Oof.
See, Eric's hung up on somebody being hammered at 8:30 on a Monday.
It does seem odd, doesn't it? Not that it should ever be okay.
That, right. So hammered that you got on the freeway the wrong way.
And almost hit the VP motorcade.
Right. The statement finishes from the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office. No one was injured in the incident, and any questions about the motorcade itself will need to be directed to the United States Secret Service.
I got a question.
Yeah, I got a question. We should all have a lot of questions. Question one, what the actual really? Seriously, question one is, how is it possible that someone got onto the freeway to be in position at all, even to approach the motorcade?
Could you be blocking the on-ramps onto eastbound, but not blocking the quote-unquote off-ramps?
Right, because this isn't which, where people get on.
Yeah, and that's right. How the guy did it, because there are some spots there. I mean, we've done stories on how some folks, when not thinking clearly, get on the wrong highway.
Possibly. Question two is, how was this person not stopped by the bevy of law enforcement escorts ahead of the vice president's vehicle before he was allowed to just drive right on by? The sheriff's deputies noted in the brief statement for the sheriff's office stopped the vehicle only after it had passed by the vice president's vehicle. It was at the back end of the motorcade. So how was there not intervention prior to this wrong-way driver actually getting that close?
What do you think, like throwing out a spike strip out of your vehicle?
Or one of the vehicles driving in front of to encumber that oncoming? You have a vehicle driving at the motorcade. What's your purpose there other than to point the direction? Aren't you supposed to intercept that potential danger?
Okay, so that's a legitimate question of, okay, if you have a motorcade of however many motorcycles / squad cars, what's the point
Yes.
If
are we just giving you directions to the airport? Or are we supposed to get in the way of potentially terrible actors?
No,
right. And
right.
I don't know the rules of engagement.
Should there have been some type of diversion?
Yes. I mean, but diversion. That's the word.
Whether it's hitting that car somehow. I mean, that's dangerous. Someone could be killed.
Of course.
Including the law enforcement officer.
And in this case, you would have taken the life of someone, perhaps, potentially, who intended no harm, but was in the wrong spot,
right,
doing the wrong thing. But, right.
It's happening. It's
don't
happening.
You have to treat that as potentially hostile?
Right.
A closed freeway and someone's driving at the vice president's vehicle? What are the rules of engagement? Who would make that call? If you're a sheriff's deputy who's involved in that, like, is that you in that split moment? Are you supposed to? Are you empowered to, you know, maybe ram that vehicle or do whatever? Or do you have to wait for a call from the Secret Service? Do you I don't know what those rules are, but they should, since they're doing the motorcade. And you can't have somebody drive on by. That's the whole point of having the motorcade. Otherwise, just put her in a cab. What are we doing?
Uber.
Right? Just, all right, this is Tim. He's your driver today. He'll get you to the airport. Right, but don't spend too long in line, right? According to our story the other day, you only get 3 minutes to hug.
Yeah, right.
You get dropped off at the airport. Right? What is the point of the motorcade and all the law enforcement that surrounds it if not to intercept a potential hostile who is quickly approaching? And here we are again with another story right here in Milwaukee. 8:55 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
WTMJ, W277-CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee. From the Annex Wealth Management Studios, this is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
WTMJ forecast sponsored by Dave Drake Camp Heating, where your comfort is their family's tradition. High of 62 degrees today. Could see some frost inland. Should be a little bit warmer along the lakeshore tonight under mostly clear skies. Chance for rain tomorrow night. Otherwise, mostly sunny on Thursday with a high of 63 degrees. Huge show today. Visit the podcast page. You can text Vince to 855-616-1620. We'll send you the link or get it wherever you get your podcast. A long discussion about what is ahead today in Green Bay as the Packers are warring with the city of Green Bay over a long-term lease. Going to be a news conference this afternoon. I break down all the politics involved in that in our 8 o'clock hour. Also, it's some interesting conversation about the motorcade. And also the sales tax vote that wasn't. It's all up there on the podcast page. We'll hand it over to Steve Scafidi. The WTMJ Political Power Hour is up next. Bucks start tonight.